Pride is here. UK Radio Pride, supported by Audio Content Fund on Pride Radio.
Coronavirus has cancelled Pride across the country and around the world. The annual celebration and demonstrations of our queer identities postponed for at least 12 months. Nothing can replace that lost experience, that shared moment of unity that so many of us look forward to each and every single year. But we're doing our bit on Pride Radio to bring you the spirit of Pride this weekend and to look ahead to what we think our LGBT lives will look like 10 years from now. I will be 32. I'm Gok Wan, and this is The Panel at UK Radio Pride. Before we begin, how did we get here?
I don't think any of us who signed this report want to be thought to be approving or condoning in a moral sense homosexual behaviour.
But you are, in a sense, more tolerant.
No, what we're saying is that...
It's a certificate of immunity.
We're not, I think, to be taken, I don't want to be taken, very seriously, as approving or encouraging or morally approving of this sort of behaviour. The churches don't. They say it's sin.
I look into the window of my mind.
The 6 o'clock news from the BBC with Sue Lawley and Nicholas Winchell.
At 6 o'clock in the House of Lords, a vote is taking place now on a challenge to the poll tax. Tory rebels have said that the tax is
testing about rights for lesbian and gay people.
If you ignore AIDS, it could be the death of you. So don't die of ignorance.
Are you butch or femme? I'm thinking, oh my God, no way can I be butch. They were very much the man and the woman in those days. And the femmes all sat at the bars and the butchers brought them drinks and they played pool and, you know, it was like that.
There was a bit of the bar, I seem to remember, a kind of side room where a lot of men who like dressing as women would go and just, you know, be themselves, enjoy themselves, but, you know, away from kind of prying eyes where they wouldn't be disturbed.
People understand things so very clearly as boy or girl, pink or blue, man or woman, actually being able to finally be seen as the man, as the male that you are on your birth certificate was just amazing. It just felt right.
I, Peter, taking you, David, to be my lawful wedded husband.
I'm Kieran Richardson, an actor on Hollyoaks.
Hello.
And I'm about to become a dad.
I quite like Fletcher for a boy.
My husband and I are expecting our twins to arrive at any moment.
A little reminder of how far we've come in the last half a century, but today's conversation isn't about celebrating our victories, important though they were. Instead, I want to travel forward in time to predict the challenges we face and to explore how we overcome them. What will Pride look and feel like in 2030? That's the big question we want to explore over the next hour. Let's meet the people who will be helping me do that. First up, we've got Maud Gober. She's Director of Community Engagement at UK Black Pride and was one of its founders 15 years ago. She's also a project manager at Micro Rainbow International, where she works on providing accommodation to homeless LGBTI asylum seekers. Vinegar Strokes is an actor, singer, comedian, and star of Drag Race UK. Her roots are in musical theatre, and she starred in Everyone's Talking About Jamie in the West End. She's recently launched the hashtag It Could Be campaign to support Black Lives Matter. Lewis Oakley is one of the country's best known bisexual activists. Lewis says he's motivated by his belief that bisexuals are not treated equally, even within the queer community. He's a former LGBT Campaigner of the Year nominee and Attitude cover star. I never got the cover. And Kate O'Donnell is the founder of Trans Creative and the Trans Vegas Festival. They create platforms to allow trans voices to be heard and increase trans presence in the arts. Kate grew up as transgender in the 70s when she says nobody knew what trans was. And let's get to know you all a bit. Before we look ahead, let's warm up with some Pride memories. So first up, Maud, tell us, what is your best Pride memory? What did it feel like to stand in that space and be surrounded by those like-minded people that were genuinely in the happiest place probably they've ever been and the safest place they've been in a long, long time or ever?
For me, I think I was perhaps
4 years into the country, coming from Zimbabwe, it was the most empowering thing that has ever happened to me. It was validating. It was empowering. It was a safe space. I until it happened, until we were all there and we were celebrating, it was overwhelming. It was, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. Is this really happening? I think I was all over the place that day.
Literally giving me goosebumps, literally all over my body. It feels like it's on fire right now. It sounds very exciting. Lewis, what about you? Give us your favourite Pride memory ever.
My favourite Pride memory ever, and there are a lot. I will say the first Pride. So it was the summer of 2011. Fresh-faced 19-year-old me who had thought he was straight most of his life, but had recently seen men kissing and thinking, oh, like, maybe I want to do that, and who a few days before had his first kiss with a guy. And then basically we had Pride, and it was just this amazing day, and it was like, oh my God, like, how could anyone ever have a problem with this? Like, you know, this is just people being themselves. And basically, I got invited to go back with this one man, and I said, no, I'm straight, I couldn't possibly. And I got on the night bus with one of my friends, and it was crammed full, everyone was stinking of booze, and we were squeezed up against the front doors. I just had that epiphany of, there's a guy I'm really attracted to that said, come home with me, and I'm choosing this because I'm straight? No. So I got off at the next stop and went and found him.
I am so jealous right now. I can't even tell you, Lewis. I am so jealous. What about you, Vinegar? Come on.
Well, actually, going from what Lewis said, that guy was actually me and it was the best night of my life. No. definitely, you know, for a drag queen, Pride is basically Christmas. You know, we can work lots, we can drink lots, and it's all for free, which is amazing. So for me, my best memory was definitely hosting the cabaret stage for like an hour out of my day, which is on Wardour Street. Now, if you've been to the cabaret stage, literally, it's just a sea of gorgeous faces, gorgeous people just down this whole street. And I went on, sung a few songs, and there was one moment when I said this joke, and literally, it was a sea of laughter. So I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I just said, do you know what? Just turn to the person next to you and just hug them. And you've never seen anything so gorgeous that a bunch of, you know, people who are looking like these misfits in the world, who are just looking so gorgeous, just hugging and kind of embracing each other and being like, we are all in the same place, same moment, same page right now. And I felt like that was something. I was like, okay, this is the power of what I do, is that I can actually bring these people together, even just for like a second. So for me, that's like a massive moment. I always remember, like, Pride for me is just, it's just that. It's just seeing that view of all those faces, just smiling, beaming, just being so happy for that like moment. Do you know what I mean? So
incredible.
Yeah.
There's no other feeling like it, and I think that's what all of us unanimously agree, that Pride is that feeling of complete unity. And what about you, Kate? What's your favourite Pride moment?
Yeah, I think mine happened a couple of years ago when the trans community was under attack from TERFs, trans-exclusive radical feminists, and we were getting quite a hard time. And I've got a kind of hashtag campaign that we've had for about 5 years now called hashtag StandByYourTrans, and it got picked up by the Manchester Lesbians.
Right.
So the Manchester Lesbians got together with that campaign and they created this massive banner which said Manchester Lesbians, hashtag StandBy, and they changed it to Our Trans.
Oh, wow.
So, and we led Manchester Pride. And I think to walk through Manchester, which is where I transitioned, you know, I nearly moved out of Manchester. I transitioned nearly 20 right. years ago. And I nearly right. left Manchester. And to kind of be there with my people, with another part of the LGBT community. And there was a load of bears and there was a load of... Everyone got on board and they all wore Stand By Your Trans T-shirts. And we literally walked through the city of Manchester singing Stand By my version of Stand By Your Trans. And it was just joyous from beginning to end. And I was there with my trans boyfriend and I felt really held up and like we didn't have to do all the work. Like the community is wow. doing the work for us. And then we won the Spirit of Pride Award that year for that campaign.
Oh, now you're just showing off, Kate.
Yeah,
now you're
just showing off. My hair was on point and I chose a really brilliant pair of rainbow sequin trousers. What can I say?
It sounds great. Well, my favourite Pride moment, do you know, it's really odd because I've always been very political about being gay. But actually, when I was younger, I was always really afraid to go to Pride because I come from quite a rough area back home and I was really, really afraid. And then, so over the years, that kind of stuck with me. And then a few years ago, I got asked to host Pride. It was actually when London did World Pride at Trafalgar Square. And I remember, and I'm quite ballsy, I can walk up to staff, I'm quite a confident person. And I remember being backstage and I was literally bricking myself. I was petrified to walk out on that stage. And it's so odd because all the memories of the fear of Pride came back to me being a child again. And I couldn't explain it. I couldn't control it. You know, I'm only 19 now. So, you know, it was, you know, a few years ago. I'm lying, 45. And I walked out onto stage and I saw this sea of people, and literally makes me well up now. Look, you can see this. I saw this sea of people and I just said, hello, London. And it went crazy. And it wasn't crazy for me. It was crazy for that day. It was crazy for the spirit. And the right words we're using here, joy and unity. And it was genuinely one of the most life-changing moments of my life, because even though I'm an out gay man and everybody knows this and I talk about this a lot and I cherish it, it felt for the first time that I'd arrived, my sexuality had arrived in front of all those people. And I think that's what Pride means to so many people, and I think all of us are kind of saying that in a roundabout way, whatever your experience is that Pride is massively important because you do come together as a community, whether you are trans or bisexual or gay or you know, any ethnicity, we all come together on that day. You're listening to the panel at UK Radio Pride. Thanks for being here. So much of our Pride memories then, and our look backs at the steps our communities have made so far. As Pride events pause for a year, thanks to the virus, we want to look ahead. Trying to imagine 2030 is tough, though. 10 years ago, it was a volcano dust cloud that grounded planes for weeks, but not as long as Corona here in 2020. The Equality Act was passed, Gaga wore that meat dress, and Matt Cardle won the X Factor. Who would have thunk it? It feels like a lifetime away. And as we've entered a very shaky coalition, could we have even predicted Donald Trump would be in power 10 years ago? Now, in 2020, we're living in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. There's a potential U-turn on the Gender Recognition Act, and a new survey suggests the number of LGBT people here who have been harassed in the last 5 years has risen from a shocking 55% to 62%. So let's ask our panel, for you, what's the most important thing we need to have achieved by 2030? Kate, let's start with you, darling.
I think really in that introduction, you've kind of mentioned the things that are happening outside our community need to be representative and alive within Prides. They're not separate. And I think the things you're listed about, the Black Lives Matter, the gender reform and other issues of sexism, everything. I think we need to bring that into Pride. And for me, I feel like this year, unfortunately due to COVID, Trans Vegas was going to have a rally and a march, and I've almost been resistant to use Pride because I feel like Pride conjures up Kylie Minogue arriving, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think it had lost the politics and it had lost what's going on for our community. Like this weekend, some 18-year-old, you know, trans young people got together and created a rally. They just created it with no money. They managed to get some money for masks and hand sanitizers. And that to me felt like that's really missing.
Right.
So I think going forward, I think we have to have the fun and make sure we're celebrating, but not be fudging. I think we need to be more responsive to what's going on for our community, more live. I think.
Do you think there's a fear then that we lose out essentially a whole year of politics by not being able to have the marches and the celebrations worldwide, not to be in vision of the rest of the world? Do you think that that might hold us back, that we might, in fact, even though we're looking forward 10 years, we might only progress by 9 because of Corona, because we are in our homes?
I think that's a really good point. I think, I mean, this year I used to go to, like in the 80s, like Rock Against Racism concerts, and you'd just arrive, or Clause 28 thing. You'd literally hitch there. You didn't know how you were going to get home. You'd arrive in the middle of London in a field. There'd be something amazing going on. You'd feel fed. you'd feel inspired and rallied and raring to go. And that could keep you going for quite a long time. And I do feel like, sadly, the rally that we had planned would have just dovetailed in so nicely and given a voice. But thankfully, these young people have got together and kind of made that happen. But yeah, I think it probably has set us back. I think there was a lot we needed to shout about this year in the streets.
Yeah.
About black trans lives matter, black lives matter, about the gender reform. There was a lot we needed to get on the streets. And it is happening, but I think it would have been even bigger.
It does feel that in the last, you know, few years, like the community's had a massive setback in so many countries around the world, with things moving backwards, steps and steps backwards. And so do you think then that in 10 years time we'll be anywhere close to being heard as much as we want to? Daniel, I'm going to ask you, Vinegar, what do you think?
I think it's possible. I think there's a possibility that we can kind of get to a place that we want to get to in this 10-year kind of cycle of getting there. But I know, I feel like as much as we can't go out and do what we want to, like rallies and that kind of stuff out on the street, I am seeing a lot of stuff online where people are kind of using their platforms now. Not everyone, but a few people are using their platforms to really get something out there, get a message out there, and just finding new ways to be kind of innovative in that way, to kind of go, right, okay, if we can't go out and do it on the street, how can we do it on Twitter? How can we do it on social media?
Do you think our virtual lives are progressing us then, or do you think it's hindering us? Because there is a big argument out there at the moment that you can hide behind a screen, you can hide behind a keyboard, but is that the same as being out there? Is it the same as marching?
I don't think it's the same as being marching, but I think it's a new way where we're using these resources to get a voice out there, to get a message out there. And I think we're kind of like, you know, almost improvising what we have. You know, if we have social media, how can we use that to the best of our abilities to get that message out there, or even just start a conversation and then take it from there when we can get out there and can get out on the streets again? So yeah, I think it's tricky right now, but I think there is a crack in the armor somewhere for us to kind of break through and go, right, here we are again with this message that we started here, but now we're making it, we're amplifying it a bit more.
So your dream then, Daniel, in 10 years time, 2030, which seems like a lifetime away, doesn't it?
Actually,
in the great scheme of things, it's not that far away. What would Pride look like to you? You're standing there, you were performing, you're in front of a crowd. What would be the key messages out there, that Pride?
I think for me, I just want to see the equality that everyone deserves. I know that's a big thing to kind of wish for in such a short amount of time, but I think if we can even get halfway there, that's a start. Even a quarter of the way there, that's a start for something to go for the next 20 years or 30 years. So I think it's just everybody kind of listening and still having a conversation. For me, one thing I've learned over this COVID is that any kind of issue that we have, whether it's Black Lives Matter, trans issues, we have to keep having the conversation. And then on top of that, the education, you know. And the only way that we can actually relate to each other is through the education, you know. So I really want that to be a forefront of we are talking, educating each other and educating ourselves on top of that as well.
Great. Maud, what do you imagine in 10 years time? We're at Pride. I mean, Black Pride would be 25 years old by then. So old. what do you imagine? How do you see it playing out?
I would want to be hopeful and say that it's going to be amazing. I would love to see no one is left behind. I would love equality for all. I would love all of us to be conscious of the battles that we go through and ensure that it's a celebration and we no longer have to be fighting so much to just to be ourselves, or to be recognized, to be validated, and to have a safe space. But I'm thinking back, it's only 15 years ago that we started having Black Pride. And the question that we always used to get is, or we still get, is, why do you need a separate pride? Why don't you join the main pride? Because people don't understand the issues. And that same question from 15 years ago is still being asked today. And we still have a lot of issues in our community where we don't talk about racism. We don't talk about the things that matter within the LGBT community. We have LGBT youth being the highest number of homeless people. Those things are not addressed, and there are lots of people in our community, the disabled community, people who fall through the cracks of our support of our equality. We have equal rights, we can get married, but no one is looking behind to see who else is being left behind. So I am hopeful that we would have started being conscious to support each other, to amplify each other's voices, to stand up for our siblings. It's not only in the UK, people who come from countries where, you know, like you said, Antigone could still, it's regressing in some countries. What are we doing to show support, to show solidarity? If you need to say about educating ourselves, are we educated enough to know what's happening in another country? We have LGBT asylum seekers who come from those countries where they're being persecuted, jailed, abused, corrective rape for being who they are. And when they come to claim asylum in the UK, we're still ignorant of the challenges that they're going through at home and in the UK. So I'm hopeful that we will be conscious of these things and we will be taking steps to address the issues in different communities with everyone rallying behind each other. I should hope that Pride will still be a protest. Pride will still be a celebration and a protest. In a place where people come together to look after each other.
So it's a really hot topic, and it has been for a few years now, intersectionality in our community. So if someone was to say to you then, Maud, if you know, I'm going to give you your platform right now, I'm going to ask you the very simple question that you've probably been asked a million times over now. It's, why do we need a Black Pride? Can you tell us why we need a Black Pride?
Yeah, that question really annoys me.
But we sorry I've annoyed you. I didn't mean to.
It's okay. I think it's an important question to be answered. We always encourage people to ask. It's better for people to ask than for them to be silent and continue with the prejudice. We need a safe space. We need a place where people are valued for their experiences, for their lived experiences. We need, it's not, if you come to UK Black Pride, you see that it's not only Black people are there. We have allies. We have it's a place to celebrate and also to still raise the issue. It's still a movement. UK Black Pride is a movement. It's a political space to raise the issues that are faced in our communities. So we still need that, because the place to raise these issues is not always there for us. So if we still have racism in the community and no one is willing to talk about it, then we will continue to need a safe space to be. If someone can still go to a gay club and they're turned away because they're Black or they don't think that you're gay. I've been turned away because somebody didn't think I was a lesbian from Manchester, Canal Street.
Right.
You know, if we still have things like that happening, then we still need Black Pride. We still need safe spaces. We still have a lot of issues I could talk forever about.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back to this, Maud. We will come back to intersectionality because I think it's something that we need to discuss. But Lewis, I'm going to ask you, 10 years from now, 2030, what do you hope has happened in the last decade?
It's a loaded question. On the one hand, I hope that Pride is still dynamic so that you can go there and it be a protest, so you can go there and it can be a party, so that you can go there and, you know, for some people, I feel like it's like a battery. It's like they charge up on all the LGBT plus energy so they've got enough to see them through the year. I think at the end of the day, what we all want to see in 10 years is just a place where LGBT plus people feel comfortable to be themselves and that they've also got the resources that they need, and that differs based on you know, your identity. So I think it then becomes about how we get there. So I've got issues with funding, for example. You know, I don't know why we blow so much money on one day of the year, why we don't fund that into actual groups that are doing more community work throughout the year. That would be maybe a nice thing to see. One thing I do want as well is for us to just all be, you know, lifting each other up. You know, I do worry about our community that we're falling into this Twitter space where we're like, oh, we agree on 9 out of 10 things, so let's have it out about the one thing we don't agree on. I think we need to, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt and believe in people and just be a bit more positive as well. Because I do sometimes see younger LGBT people getting their heads bitten off because they've misspoken. I'm like, oh, let's not... turn into a bit of a movement like that. We need to debate the issues, of course,
right?
But maybe maybe there's a bit more of a balance to be had there, where it's, you know, what I found when I was 19 and coming out in the LGBT space, which it was so warm and welcoming, and I think that's still there. But I think I get a bit paranoid sometimes that sometimes, you know, we come across as like, don't say that, and we've got to do it this way. And I think we've become, maybe it's me getting older, but I think we have become more political. Whereas maybe I kind of was coming out in a bit of a time where it just did feel a bit more of a party, which is fine. I think it needs to be both, right? Because like you say, we're taking steps backwards. So I think that's why we're now all a bit more like political. We've got to drive this forward. So I think maybe just getting that balance so that everyone feels accepted by a community.
I personally feel that the virtual world that we live in, we live two lives. You know, we live our everyday in reality and we live our virtual world. And I think that most of us have different personalities for the different parts of our lives. And I think the virtual world allows us to be more political. It allows us to give a voice without a face. And I think that it can be powerful for our movement and for us to talk about things. But at the same time, there is something about being up close and personal. There's something about being in the face of it that I think is very, very, very important. And I think that, you know, there's more, just going back to your comment a moment ago about other countries, which it's very tough for them. I think it's very important to have a Black Pride, because we're not only inspiring people into providing a safe place in this country, but we're inspiring other countries to let them know that we are in solidarity with them. We are supporting them. Would you agree with that? Would you agree that the face of Pride is also about turning around to other countries that are where homosexuality and just all of us in this room, we would be illegal. We would be, you know, to prove to them that actually we have a voice, we're going to use it, and we're going to move this forward. Is that something that we want in 2030? Should we still be shouting about that and trying to inspire other countries?
Yes, I agree. We should still be shouting about it. We should still try to inspire. But importantly, we should try to work with activists on the ground to ask people to have that dialogue, to say, how can we support you? Do you want us to shout? If they say we should shout, then we shout. It's about communication. If I need support, ask me how you can support me. So platforms like Black Pride also provides that visibility to say, okay, they are there, they made it happen, we can do it. And people reach out to us to ask for solidarity, for support. And we also reach out to people in different countries who are not free to ask them how we can support them and how we can amplify their voices. So it's always about being there for each other.
Yeah. A question for all of you. Do you feel then that where we are in 2020 right now, which feels like, you know, when I was a kid, 2020 would have felt like the absolute future, that we'd be floating around in spaceships and head to toe in grey. That's my kind of my vision of what 2020 would have looked like. But do you think that actually we need to look into our community? We need to look into how we treat each other, how we treat the different parts of our community. So whether we're talking about trans or race or age, you know, all of those things, is that really important? Do we need to look at that now in preparation for 2030, that hopefully by then that we might be slightly more inclusive than we are right now? What do you think about that, Kate?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting about who is heading up Prides. I think that's important, like who gets to decide those conversations and who gets to lead the themes or the discussions or where the money's placed. And I sometimes feel like that probably needs changing, really, because I'm a great believer that if you kind of hand over the, I don't want to say power, but if you hand over the resources to different types of people, you will get different events. And I often feel like sometimes we get the same event,
right?
Because we're kind of, the same people are in charge. Like, I run a trans festival, and I'm really aware as a white, you know, trans person who's in their 50s that it really needs handing over. So we've been handing over events, you know, or work in
club. For diversity.
Yeah, and just that perspective, you know, just knowing yourself and the impact that has on funding and resources and the feel of an event. Like, who's deciding that? And I think if you're not working with more grassroots, like after seeing this trans march organised by really young people, I really want to fundraise for them to carry on doing their thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's about what do people need on the ground? Because that's the exciting thing. And I think if Pride could be more... Sometimes for me, when I look at Prides, I look at the big names and I'm like, could you not have found an LGBT person to be the headline act? Is that beyond the realms of, you know, and I get quite frustrated by that, that we're always looking outside our community. And I think, why don't you really look in and nurture talent and elevate voices within the community at those events rather than shipping in somebody.
Absolutely. Lewis, you were going to say something. Sorry, Del.
Oh, so about us coming together at Pride. I think so, because, you know, I have experienced biphobia at London Pride, at Black Pride with comments. And sometimes I do like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I put it more down to ignorance, and maybe you just don't know that what you've just said is really offensive and things like that. But I do want to see us coming together and just being more aware of the nuances. You know, if you wouldn't like this said to you as a gay person, on the flip side, I wouldn't like this said to me as a bi person. And actually, I shouldn't feel weird wearing a bisexual t-shirt to Pride and have someone say, you know, why are you wearing that? But, you know, what do you mean by bisexual? It's like, we're at Pride. How can I be an S-list? What do you mean? What do I mean?
Yeah. Daniel, looking inside the community then, do you think then, as I said, we're in 2020 now, we're talking about 2030. You know, this year we've had, you know, the BLM movement has gone all over the world.
Yes.
Absolutely. So just talk to us a little bit about the BLM movement then within our community. Are we doing enough? Do we need to be more supportive? Do we need to look at racism within our community? What do you think?
I think across the board, we need to be doing more and more and more. And I think it's not just to do with, your friends to the left and right and what they're thinking. It's to do with the kind of brands that we're buying into, the companies we're working with, the apps we're using. I can use a filter to rid all brown faces. And it's that kind of way of life that I think we need to kind of filter out and start having the conversations of, okay, how racist are we within our community? How phobic are we against trans people or bisexual or whatever? You know, I think it's a conversation across the board. And I think what's happened with the BLM movement within the community, I think a lot of people are now being very aware of, oh, am I being racist in a certain way of, I don't know, fetishizing a black person. I had a chat with someone the other week, and he said, "Oh, I look. Can I say arse on this show? Can I say arse? I've said
it. You can, it's my show, darling. You can say whatever you like."
Someone said to me on Facebook, "Oh, Daniel, I just love your big black arse," and I went, okay, that's great. Can't it just be a big beautiful ass or a big great ass or a big booty or whatever? Like, it's just something which isn't like the word black isn't the kind of adjective or the fetish behind my ass. And then we had this big chat, and I was like, I don't know if we're going to talk anymore because you're clearly on a different page to where I'm at right now. So again, it's a conversation that I think needs to happen across the board of how racist are we within the community? Not obviously mean to be, but it's a conversation that needs to go, okay, I'm thinking this, I've been brought up thinking this kind of feeling about black people, whatever, and how do I change that with me to actually pass that on to other people within the community? So I think actually it's a massive conversation to have across the board from people to brands to apps and everything like that.
Absolutely. And Maud?
I think I agree with everybody. We need to look within the community. We need to educate ourselves. I feel sometimes that there's this sort of a selfish element that when people are all right within like a sort of a small space, then everything should be all right. We're blinded to anything else. So we need to tackle the racism in our community. We need to tackle the biphobia. Louise, I'm sorry for your experiences. We need to tackle the transphobia, and we need to stand behind each other. We need to support each other. If people within the community are being transphobic, we need to challenge that. We need to educate. Sometimes no is about challenging. We challenge ignorance and we also educate. If somebody's being biphobic, we need to work on that. If somebody's being, you know, misogynistic, we need to challenge that. We need to educate. So we need to work within our community. And 10 years seems far away, but it's not. It just sounds nice because it says 2030, but it's close. We need to do the work. And everybody needs to be conscious within themselves. What am I doing? What do I know? It's not that you have to be going out there and becoming an activist. Even educating yourself is something.
Do you know what I think is remarkable? Is that I'm sat here with this smorgasbord of talent and mind and brilliance right now. And we're talking about in 10 years' time, where effectively we could have had a Pride magic wand, and we could have shaken it in the air, and we could have had any Pride we wanted to. And what's brilliant about this, I think, is the fact that all of us are agreeing that we need to look within our community first, and we need to look at how we treat one another, because our community is the most beautiful recipe with so many incredible ingredients. So the trans community, the bi community, the black community, you know, all of us in this one space. And I think it's remarkable that we are now looking for towards the future, but to kind of fix the problems that we've got, that we experience firsthand. And I think that's absolutely remarkable. And I think it takes a very, very honest bunch of people to admit that.
I think for me, I would like to have that community feel. For me, one of the great moments is when I was younger in these clubs, dancing full of LGBT people and just having that arrogance in my mind of like, well, you know what, if people hate us, they're missing out. Like, look at everyone here, we're all having a great time, I feel so empowered right now, everyone's like great and different, but we're all getting on. And just being like, my god, the anti-LGBT plus people, like, they're just sat there miserable, like complaining, and actually feeling that vibe of like, we've got something here, guys, we've got this energy, and we're all together, and I want to make sure that everyone feels that.
Great. Kate?
So for me, when I'm kind of doing events and kind of talking to groups of LGBT people, I always encourage them to pick another letter from the LGBT lineup and be a champion for another part of the community. So I'm a bi champion because I feel they're really underrepresented. So when I get my platforms, I always make sure I elevate bi people. I get them to cheer, I get people to kind of shout out and have a bit of fun and make sure that they're visible. Because, and I think we can all do that, and I think that's a simple thing we can all do personally, is kind of keep our eye out for somebody else within the LGBT community and you know, consciously raise them up.
Absolutely. We've heard Pride memories from eyes meeting across a bus to trans people walking side by side with lesbians in Manchester, about Black Pride claiming spaces for the first time to dragging up in front of thousands. We've talked about how Pride leadership needs to be more diverse in thinking and in representation. Biphobia and transphobia are clearly still a thing. There's plenty still to do. We've had the opportunity of envisaging a beautiful Pride in 2030, but our esteemed panel strongly believe there's work to be done in our community first. How inspiring. If you're just joining us, where have you been? I'm Gok Wan, and you're with the panel at UK Radio Pride. We're asking, what will Pride look and feel like in 2030? We have a range of friends to share their views and get us thinking. Maud Gober is from the UK Black Pride, Drag Race and West End star Vinegar Strokes, by activist Lewis Oakley, and the founder of the Trans Vegas Festival, Kate O'Donnell. Now, I want to think about Pride itself now. In 2019, we saw a record number of towns and cities across the UK celebrate with LGBT plus Pride events. As the world's become smaller, we've seen the American idea of Pride Month settle in June, whether it's banners in supermarkets, corporate sponsorship, and the emergence of straight allies in force. So panel, will Pride always be a protest? Lewis, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. This is a thing. I think Pride is what it means to you. So some people are going there protesting and wanting to make their point. Some people are going there to enjoy that environment and only get this one time a year, you know. I think a lot of people probably do live in cities where you can go to local LGBT places. Some people travel in and they don't get to be around other LGBT people. And one thing that I deal with a lot with bisexuality is bisexuals that feel isolated, that do feel like they're the only bi in the city.
Right.
Never mind like the only gay in the village. They feel like they're the only bi in the city sometimes. So having that community feel is important for people. And, you know, I do think it's important to get it right. Like you say about how we fund it, I think that really will change by 2030. I think where the money goes will have to change, because I think we do look around and say, you know, why does Starbucks or whoever need a massive float going down? That clearly cost a couple of thousand pounds that could have gone to a really good cause, and imagine what they could do with it. But then you still want Starbucks to say, we're here for you and we want to publicly go on record of supporting LGBT plus people so that our staff and our customers know we got your back. So it's one of those things of how it will evolve.
It's a bit of an argument, this one. The idea that you can walk down the high street and an estate agent has put a flag up in their window.
Mm.
The idea that maybe, like you say, Starbucks have paid for a float to be part of it, that they are making a pledge to look within their workforce to be supporting it. So surely the more people that are out there, the bigger names, the bigger badges on show, that's a good thing for Pride, because then it means that we can have awareness and we know that we're getting support elsewhere. Do you not think?
It's a tough one, right? I don't know whether it will evolve in, you know, a big company will sponsor a local trans group or things like that, so that they, you know, they pay their entry into the Pride and they get to go and do it. Something like that. I don't know. I'm excited to see how it will progress. I don't think it will stay the same as it is now.
Right, okay. And how important is the protest element, do you think, Maud?
I think the protest...
Could it be a massive party is what I'm asking, Maud. I love a party.
One of course, massive everybody pickup. Loves a massive party, but, you know, Pride should still be a protest. As long as we have issues in our communities, then we need to protest. We need to work at challenging those. We need equality for all. So we can celebrate ourselves, we can celebrate who we are, but we should still be conscious that there is work to be done and we are protesting. There's no reason why we can't do both.
We can definitely do both. And being one of the co-founders of UK Pride, how has protesting helped you, the community that you're fighting with?
At first, when we started, we only had, like I said, more than 100 people. The last Pride in 2019, UK Black Pride in 2019, had around 10,000 people attending. So
wow.
There is work to be done and people still need that safe space. So it is important.
Kate, talk to us about protesting. Something tells me you're not shy.
No, I'm not shy for protest. I mean, I literally grew up in protest. I spent most of my youth on Westminster Bridge with a placard in one hand and a kind of horse on the other side. So I feel like it's kind of...
Did you take your own horse? Was it your own horse?
they're easy to find on those marches. There's always somebody on a horse trying to cajole you around. But I think when it... Like the protest in Manchester that was kind of organised from grassroots, I was meant to be speaking at it, but I couldn't go because of my partner. But the message that I wanted to say is that the protest is really important. But I think what we have to not lose is pride. Like, I think what we need to be nurturing within our community is to feel proud of who we are. Not that we have to, you know, the fight's part of it, but while we're fighting, it's like, what are we fighting for? And I think we really have to instill that sense of pride within ourselves. And we're really battling against it. But I think of the trans community, like, and the black community and how we're represented. It can be so negative, it can be so one-dimensional, it can be, you know, disabling in a way. And I feel like our job, sometimes the protest we have to make is to kind of live our best lives and hold our head up and take space. The protest isn't always shouting.
So interesting you say that. It's so interesting you say that, because you're absolutely right. It's not always about making the noise, it's just being... It's being in that space, whether you're physically there or not, just to be there for that moment. You're absolutely right.
I'm projecting the pride in our community rather than being the debate in our community. You know, people asking, why is there a black pride? How tiring is that when you could be lifting up black LGBT people rather than discussing it, or trans people, like, are trans people women? And it's tedious. It's like, no, we're much more than that. Come and check out the Trans Art Festival we've just done online. You know, it's so nuanced, it's so exciting. And I think in terms of commercial, like with Starbot, the thing that comes to me, like, what are you doing all year round? So when a young trans person or a black trans person comes into your shop for a coffee, are they going to feel safe? Have those staff got any awareness what that means to be gender fluid in terms of pronouns? Or they're asking for people's names, you know, are the toilets okay? Do they feel safe? It's like that would be better spent. I think organisations we're working with need to make a commitment to all year round so that we can feel proud and we can get on with being excited and proud about who we are. We've come through a lot. And I think underneath it, we very rarely get to the pride bit because we're having to scrabble away for a day, you know, to go and enjoy ourselves or find some connection with our community.
Just one day? My pride lasts for several weeks, just so you're aware.
You're hardcore. I mean, I think that's becoming very clear.
Vinegar, we deserve the party, right?
Oh, yes.
We've earned the party.
Oh, yes.
I'm still going to stand with the party here.
Yes.
We've earned the party. Is it enough just to have a party? That's a big question. Could you have pride without the protest, just the party?
Oh, God, I think they come hand in hand, my love. Do you know what I mean? I think... I was just thinking, actually, as the casual speaking, you know, just existing, just us existing and walking down the street with not look at the ground or feeling shy, just existing, walking head up is a protest in itself for me. And I think... just that in itself, even if you're the sort of person who can't shout, who can't go out and hold a placard, it doesn't matter, because as long as you're going out with that confidence and you're laying those footsteps down for someone else to... Because bear in mind, it's not just us. There are people who aren't even born yet who are going to come into this world and be part of our community and want to fill those spaces. And I think it is up to us to protest and have the party to say, do you know what? We have this amazing community you're going to be part of, and it is safe for you to be here and to include your voice into what our message is. So I think the party comes with the protest, the protest comes with the party, and the protest comes with just walking, talking, you know, and being your authentic self and not being afraid or ashamed of who you are, because it's gorgeous. It's a great community. But I think once we kind of deal with what's at home, you know, including every single person in the party and including every single person at the protest, it's all working. It's all going to work in the way we want it to work. So yeah, I think let's party, let's protest, but let's shout, and let's shout in the ways that we want to shout him, whether it's quiet or loudly.
Now, I personally, I love a protest. I love a protest. And I also really do love a party. And what I love about Pride, and this is very personal now, but for that one day, and I wish it was every day of the year, of course I do, but for that one day, you get to see so much of the community, all different areas, where you stand in one space with all the people that you identify with. And for me, that's massively important because, you know, I think all of us in some way live quite a shielded world. We kind of fit with where we feel most comfortable, where we belong. And on that day, I love the idea of everyone coming together in a space. And it makes me feel like our community is tighter and smaller and in unity because we couldn't have a Pride this year. And I wanted to do something because I have to celebrate. I have to have a party. So I DJ'd online, a virtual online. And we had, I think, almost 800,000 people on watching the DJing. I mean, I'm not showing off, but I am. 800,000 people on. And we raised £10,000 for Stonewall, which I'm very, very proud about. And what was wonderful about DJing and seeing the comments flying around wasn't just that I could see how drunk people was getting, having a great party, listening to the music, but I could see proudness through the screen. I could see them genuinely feeling like they belonged to something. And I didn't know whether they were Black. I didn't know whether they were Asian or trans or bisexual. You know, I had no idea at all. I could just see the words and it felt proud and wonderful. Do you think that our Pride as a party, do you think it's inclusive enough though? Do you think that we should be, you know, what can we do on that one Pride day where we are all included? What can we then filter through to the rest of the year? So it's not just about a day that feels
I think
like
it's
that.
Interesting, like with Manchester Pride, it's often forgotten the work they do all year round. And they support a lot of community events, a lot of art events. They're a charity set up, so the money they raise is to filter into that year. And I think that can often not get shouted about, maybe, and people don't see that organisation necessarily as a resource and as somewhere that is doing that work. So, yeah, I think it's keeping that energy going. I think it's, like Lewis said, it's like charge you up at that event and then how can we keep plug you in to more events? Like Trans Creative, we have trans socials like once every couple of weeks where we literally just get together and watch a film together or have a discussion or watch something that's going on. So we have our big yearly event, but that's not enough. So I think it's little and often as well. And that includes a party, Gok. So you know, maybe you need... little and often parties.
I think that what I'm going to do for the next 12 months is just hold every day, have a big pride party in my kitchen. Yes. And everyone's welcome.
I'm making your breakfast. Da, 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 da.
It's going to be the most intersectional kitchen in the world because everyone is welcome. You're listening to the panel at UK Radio Pride. Thanks for joining us to hear about our hopes and ambitions for Pride 2030. But before we go, I want to bring things back in time a bit. 2020 has been a trial for everyone. The disruption to our lives, the cancelling of our events, and an increase in attacks of all sorts on our communities. After months of this, can you imagine how good Pride is going to feel next year? I'm so excited. Panel, what are you most looking forward to next year's Pride? Lewis, I'm going to start with you. Next year's Pride, you're there. Let's set the scene now. The buzz, you can smell the people. It's all happening.
A couple of things, actually. So first would be, so last year I did actually get invited to go on stage and say something to the crowd, and I was completely ill-equipped for it. And basically the host was just like, hey, just talk to the crowd for 3 minutes. So I was like, So it was just me saying, you know, let me see the bi flags, let me see the trans flags. And I can't tell you what I said. I don't know what came out of my mouth. So hopefully maybe if I go and do that again, that would be fun. Second of all, I'm 3 months away from becoming a dad, so I can bring a little baby next year and get them a little flag. So that would be super fun.
Congratulations, Lewis. That's amazing news.
Yeah, so start them early with their first Pride. So that'll be a really fun year. And I think I think we will be so overdue by that point that I'm going to make the effort to go to more prides. So, do London, do Manchester, do Brighton, but then also do the smaller ones, in places we never think to go. Last year, I'm from a weird place in the Midlands called Walsall.
So I've been to Walsall. Walsall is not weird. I've been to Walsall. You can't say that, Lewis.
What are you going to do? Kick me out? I already left.
This is about inclusion, Lewis. That's what this whole debate's about.
Well, hold on. But actually, when I went back last year, and I didn't even know, they were having Walsall Pride, and I was like, oh my God, I didn't even realise.
You won't be allowed there again, let me tell you.
To have made plans. So actually go to some smaller prides as well.
Great. I can highly recommend the Isle of Wight. Let me tell you, I had a great time there last year. Right, okay, so what are you looking forward to most, Vinegar, next year?
Oh my God, well, I'm just missing performing. That's what I thrive in, it. So I can't wait to get back onto a Pride stage. Hopefully the main stage. No, I've been on telly now, so come on, main stage, the tiny ones on Wardour Street going, hi, even though I love it, but like the main stage, hopefully, singing a few songs and just kind of being like enveloped in that energy and all those sexy people and that kind of stuff. And I can't wait to do a gig in Warsaw.
Maud, my darling, what are we looking forward to for next year?
I'm just looking forward to just the Pride itself, UK Black Pride, just being there, just being in that space and just being reunited with everyone who comes, the team, the people who attend. Just appreciating that space. This year has shown me that, okay, I love it, but I absolutely love it. So I can't wait.
Maud, I just need to let you know now, you are probably one of the most beautiful, nicest people I've ever met in my life. And you make me feel practically satanic, just so you know. Just so you know. I mean, you are gorgeous. And I can't wait to be at Black Pride with you next year as well. I cannot wait.
I'm so excited.
For a DJ job. You don't know that. I'm DJing there, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
If you don't let me, I'm just going to bring my own kit and set up in the corner.
Right? We will let you. We'll be honored to have you there. Thank you. I'm holding you to that.
That's a booking. That's a booking. Yay. Kate, next year, 2021.
I'm really excited. I think on the back of this year and things that have happened is who's going to get the centre spot. I think we're going to have different voices being given more airtime. And that's my hope, that it's going to be more interesting because of what's happened this year and who's come forward and our consciousness has been raised and we're a bit more awake. And I really hope that that's reflected. Also for me, I mean, trans prides, they're just a beautiful, and sadly this year was going to be our first live march and demo in Manchester. So I'm really hoping this time next year we can just recreate that. You know, there was a great sadness because the Manchester City Council got involved this year. They gave us a stage, toilets, you know, a route, and then it all literally just disappeared overnight. So I think to get trans people in Manchester being part of that whole Pride Month, I'm really excited for that raising of visibility. And a party.
I have a sneaky feeling, Kate, you are going to make that all happen for next year. And you know what? We might have missed it in 2020, but you got a whole 12 months to make it even bigger. And how incredible is that? You lot are amazing. I love all of you. I feel like I've met my new family, my new friends, whether you like it or not. Thank you so much to Maud Gober, the wonderful Vinegar Strokes, the beautiful Lewis Oakley, and the very inspirational Kate O'Donnell. And thanks to all of you for listening to the panel at UK Radio Pride. I'm Auntie Gok. Happy Pride. Stay safe.